Shabbat Shalom and welcome to this week's Living Torah and of course Chag Sameach. We are into the festival seasons. We will be celebrating, at least we will, from the sighting of the new moon, we'll be celebrating Yom Kippur beginning on Sunday night and then meeting at the local lake here with 20-25 people, and we'll be celebrating Sukkot. If you're in the area, you'd like to stop by, just send me an email or call us, whatever, and be glad to give you instructions and directions of how to get there. Really looking forward to this festival time and just sitting by the lake. We've got some plans just to relax and to enjoy. We're praying that we would be able to enjoy His presence and to be able to enjoy each other also. So wherever you are going to be observing these festivals, pray it's a blessed time for you. I'll be talking about Yom Kippur here in just a few moments. Of course, last weekend, the Quran burning, that wasn't. As soon as I got off, pretty much right after I turned the camera off, I saw the news report that this pastor in Gainesville had canceled that. And of course, then, you know, all these other places said, well, we're going to do the same. We're going to do the same. And it just kind of ended up being a non-news story from the media's standpoint. Now, I think there's a lot of news story here in that what happened was this pastor received a visit from the FBI. And right after that, he decided to cancel this Quran burning. I just wonder in what way this man was threatened. I wonder what information that they may have had about him or just what they did to coerce him into this. Of course, as I said last week, I'm not in favor of burning books. I really like what Brigitte, can't remember her last name, said, you know, we don't need to burn the Quran. What we need to do is open the Quran. And we do in cultures in America, in Europe, all over. What people need to do is open the Quran and be able to sit down and see what it actually says. Now, I'm not telling you to go out and buy a copy of it and to read the whole thing through, but to the concept of opening the Quran is to understand the principles that are within this book. And basically it comes down to, this is not a religion of peace in any way. And of course, you guys know that. Bibi Netanyahu is going back to Washington this weekend. The news stories of what's going to be going on right now is kind of sketchy. But for him to be called back to Washington at such a time like this of the festival seasons, I believe there's probably much that's going to be done there. Maybe a lot of things under the table. Of course, there's been so much done on the table to begin with, but there's going to be much more. And just for him to be coming back this fast after the last trip means there's something going on. They're trying to push something through. So be watchful, be aware of what's happening in front of us, and keep an eye on the news. Of course, you know, you'll be at various Sukkot settings, but that doesn't mean that we're just kind of, you know, we still need to be in the world, but not of the world. We need to be aware of what's going on around us, okay? Well, this week, we're going to be in, I forgot to write the scriptures down, but it's pretty easy. Deuteronomy, coming up in the last few chapters here. We're going to be in Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 1 through verse 52. Also, the Haftorah readings of that one would be 2 Samuel chapter 22, verses 1 through 51. And it would be, 2 Kings. We've got just about three chapters left before we get to the end of those readings. Of course, we're coming to the end of everything here. So let's see, 25, 24, 23. So it'd be 21, 22, and 23, I believe, is the chapters. Like I said, I didn't write it down. Wasn't planning on going into those verses yet or this week. So check the website, of course, it's right there. The Song of Moses. What an incredible thing this is, that you read through it. And like I said last week, the scripture actually tells us to write it and to take it into our hearts, okay? It's not just be a document that we look at out here, but it's to be something that's inside of us. And what's the purpose of this? Why is it that in the end, in the book of Revelation, we see that they're singing the song of Moses? Well, I think the chapter of the song of Moses, if you just sit down and read it slowly, and imagine Moses in his pastoral role, but also a father's heart. And that I've seen, you know, we've seen that all through Deuteronomy, that this father's heart, the extreme pastoral heart, is just coming out in Moses over and over again. He's telling the people again and again and again and again and again that this is what you need to grasp. This is, you need to allow this Torah to be a part of you. It needs to be in you. You need to meditate on it. Do not allow it to be taken from you, because in here is the words of life. And he starts out in chapter 32, verse 1. Hear, O heavens, as I speak. Listen, earth, to the words of my mouth. Now, he's not actually telling the earth to listen, but it's the Torah is transcending. The Torah is not something that's in the heavens, and it's not in the earth. It's the Torah is everywhere, because the Torah is literally the presence, the essence of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. And so Moses is saying to the people that what I'm about to say to you is the same of importance. It's the words that I'm going to be bringing forth, that you don't need to see them as, oh, that's something for over there, or oh, it's over here. No, these words need to be literally transcending everything, every place that you are, every part of your being. These words need to be a part of. May my teaching fall like rain. May my speech condense like dew. Like light rain on blades of grass, or showers on growing plants. This light rain. We start to look at these words, and Moses actually he prefaces it in how he would like his words to be received by the people. May it be like light rain. My speech condense like dew. A light rain on blades of grass, or showers on a growing plant. You know, we've had a period here in Oklahoma over the last couple of months that has just been dry, dry, dry. And it's not abnormal for us to have this dry spell, but it's just like, you know, there was just no moisture anywhere. It's been scorching heat. And all of a sudden, last week, we got this period of rain. And it started out is this just beautiful sprinkle of a rain, kind of like I remember in Florida. Growing up in Florida, we would get these rains, and when I was there as a pastor, we'd get rains in Florida, especially up in North Florida, that would last for 2 or 3 days. And it wouldn't be a flood of a rain, it would just rain, and would continue to rain, but it would be like this shower. And so this rain here that we got last week, it started out as this beautiful shower just coming straight down. There was no wind. It was just soaking gently into this parched ground. And then all of a sudden, it turned into this torrent of rain. Well, what do you get after that? You get, you know, the roads are washed out. You get these trenches of everything. And Moses is saying, I don't want my words to be like this torrent of rain. I want it to be gentle upon you right now. I want these words to soak into you gently. And there's a great message in there that that's how our words should be. You know, when you come to someone and you start talking about your faith in Messiah, and then you start discussing with them about the things of Torah, especially if you're new, all right? It's this this thing that we get into to just kind of flood everybody with information. And you've heard me teach on this. that we don't need to be flooding people with information. We need to be giving them the light, gentle rain. Give them a little piece of it, okay? Give them something that can that they can grasp, that they can it can kind of soak into them. And then once they're ready for a little bit more, then a little bit more rain, a little like dew almost upon them. Just a little bit here, a little bit there. Let it soak into them, not give them this deluge of rain of our words, which is what we normally want to do, right? And then it goes on in verse 3, "For I will proclaim the name of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. Come, declare the greatness of our Elohim." Think about this, that Moses is telling the people, "I am going to proclaim the name of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. I am going to proclaim his greatness upon the earth." And Moses is letting, is just about to pass the baton on to Joshua and to the people. And so he's saying to them, is I'm going to do this, and then it is your responsibility to do this. And think about this, the awesome responsibility that the Almighty has gifted us with, has given to us today, that it is our job, it is our duty, it is our responsibility, it is our right, it is our privilege to proclaim his name upon the earth. I mean, stop and consider that one for a few moments. That the Almighty, blessed be he, has chosen that his name would be proclaimed upon this earth through a group of people such as us. That we have this, there's no word. I mean, privilege, I guess, would be the best word for this. Responsibility is more of a duty, but privilege that we get to, we are allowed to proclaim his greatness. And how do we do that? We do that through our life, through our lifestyle, through making sure that when something is accomplished in our lives through him, we don't just keep it to ourselves. You know, something happens in your life. You receive, you get a raise, you get a new job, you go through a trial and a tribulation, you come out the other end of it. Don't just go, well, you know, that was nice. But proclaim it. Okay, when I was really new, the first couple weeks I'd gone to church, this is back in 1986, when I first came to Messiah. My favorite time was, and I've talked about this before, was on Sunday nights and Wednesday nights. We had testimony meeting. Okay, we had a little testimony time. And so during these, it was like, okay, we don't have to be out of here by noon. So it was a little bit more relaxed. And so the pastor, the associate pastor, would get up and, anybody have a testimony tonight? And it was just, to me, the most incredible time of hearing, especially I was surrounded by a number of older people that had really lived something that, for the most part, has been forgotten about today. They had lived through some mighty moves of the Spirit in revival meetings of old. And I would hear them as they would get up and talk about what the Almighty had done in their lives through the years. What were they doing? They were proclaiming his greatness. You know, today, we really don't have, for the most part, we don't have a lot of opportunities for these things to happen. Because what normally happens in church settings, you're locked into, to three songs, three poems, three offerings, and three prayers. And that's it. In Messianic settings, Hebrew root settings, we're locked in. We're locked into we're locked into the blessings. There's nothing wrong with the blessings. we're locked into, we have to go to the Torah portion. We have to have some midrash time in the Torah portion. We have to have an exhortation in there. And we're locked into these things. We don't have time for interaction. We don't have time to do just what Moses is telling us to do. Proclaim his greatness upon the earth. You say, well, that's hard for me to do. Not when you get excited about it. Not when you get excited about what he's doing. I mean, you know, if you you get a new, you go out and you get a new fishing rod. You guys get a new, you know, it's coming up on hunting season. You get a new gun. How hard is it to show that off? Ladies, you know, you go out and whatever ladies buy, you know, you get something. How hard is that to show that off? See, we show off what we're proud of. And when we're proud of him in our lives, and we're proud of what he's doing in our lives, it becomes very, very easy for us to proclaim his goodness. Now, he goes on, and this is one of my favorite verses of the Song of Moses. It's in verse 5. It's almost, to me, it's funny. He is not corrupt. Well, let's go back. The rock, this is verse 4, his work is perfect, for all his ways are just, a trustworthy Elohim who does no wrong. He is righteous and straight. He is not corrupt. The defect is in his children, a crooked and perverted generation. This is a funny verse. The defect is in his children. He knows. All right, he knows that we have a defect. You know, I mean, there is a reason that he calls us sheep, right? Because he knows us. He knows what our general tendencies are. That we go right back to the garden, and, you know, people, oh, I've heard so many people through the years, when I see Adam and Eve, I'm just going to slap them, you know, because they caused all this problem. Well, I'm going to go up to them and say, you know, tradition says it took you guys about 7 years to eat of that tree. You know, congratulations. I probably wouldn't have lasted that long. So the defect is not just in Adam and Eve. The defect's in all of us, okay? And even without, I mean, if you and I had been Adam and Eve, we would have probably done the same thing, I would imagine, right? I mean, face it. And so he says, right up to the front, he says, I know that I'm perfect and you're not. You know, there's, you can kind of take heart in that, can't you? That he knows who we are. He's not expecting us, you know, he desires for us to walk perfectly before him, but he knows. He knows us, and he knows that we're going to mess up. We're going to sin along the way. We're going to do things that are not right. Hence, he has provided a plan. It's called Messiah Yeshua. You know, I mean, how incredible is he that not only does he see us as who we are, but he also even has a way for us to be restored to him. I'm going to go on down to, let's see, we're going to skip through quite a bit. We go into this in, for a number of verses. It's the account of this defective people, just like us, that are abandoning a loving father. I mean, you just read, I'm not going to take the time to read the whole chapter, and that would be a pretty easy thing to do right now. But just read it slowly. And read it not only from the standpoint of the heart of Moses, but that Moses is speaking the words of the Father to these people. And you just see the compassion and the love of this this people that's abandoning him. It's like a young child that is adopted into a family. And they're shown all kinds of love. They're given everything. In the end, the child rebels. Or it doesn't even have to be an adopted child, just your own child, you know. We've all seen in our children times of rebellion. You do everything you possibly can. You give them, you train them, you pour your life into them. And what happens? There's that time of abandonment. There's that time in which these verses come true in their life. the same as these verses come true in our life when it comes to our Father. For none of us have done this thing absolutely right. And he goes on in verse 26, I considered putting an end to them, erasing their memory from the human race. You know, I can understand that verse. I really can. Because I think any of us that, now there's some people out there that have this notion of they're wonderful and they're great and they're perfect in their own right. I've never had that notion. Never had that kind of a dream. If you take a good, honest look in your mirror, okay, you understand this verse. That I considered putting an end to them. Erasing them from the memory of the human race. Just go ahead and just, you know, flush the whole thing, right? I mean, that's about the easiest way to say it. But I feared the insolence of their enemy. Feared that their foes would mistakenly think, we ourselves accomplished this, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, and nothing to do with it. Here was a fear. God says, I have a fear. I had a fear that if I was just to wipe them out from the memory of the human race, if I was to take the people that were called the Hebrews, his children, and just wipe them out, that the enemies would be able to say, ha-ha, we did it. Spiritual enemies? Physical enemies? The answer is yes, of course. That Satan himself would have been able to say, look what we did. And the Almighty says, I was not going to allow that to happen. Why? Not for you and me. Not for the Hebrews. But it says, but I feared the insolence of their enemy, feared that their foes would mistakenly think we ourselves had accomplished this. Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh had nothing to do with it. What is he upholding? He's upholding his name. See, the very fact that you and I sit here with redemption offered to us, that we have the ability, the God-given gift to open his Torah and to even think about the pursuit of this Torah and the living these words out. It's nothing to do with us. It's not so that you and I can have the blessings of Deuteronomy 28. It's so that his name can be established. Back to what Moses said, declared as great among the nations, among the earth, upon the earth. The redemption is not about us. It's about him. It's about upholding his name. He goes on to say about this people that he is going to redeem. They are a nation, verse 28, they are a nation without common sense, utterly lacking in discernment. If they were wise, they would figure it out and understand their destiny. You know, again, he has no, you know, he doesn't have this false notion that we are something, all right? I mean, yes, we are, we have, because we are made in his image, because we are redeemed. But it all goes back to him. It doesn't go to anything that we've done, does it? And he doesn't have this false notion that any time upon this earth, in our fallen state, that we're going to become super spiritual, right? And he says, we don't have any common sense. When it comes to spiritual things, we don't have any common sense. We utterly lack discernment. You have to agree with the verse. We really do. Because if they were wise, they would figure it out and understand their destiny. If we ever understood our destiny and where our destiny is. Now, I'm not talking about a physical place called Jerusalem. Okay, yes, our destiny in the end is Israel. Our destiny is Jerusalem. But our destiny that is important is our destiny is with Him. Okay, it does not matter, and take the context of what I'm about to say, okay? Don't take this out of context. It doesn't matter if, you know, the Word could have said that our destiny is Oklahoma City or Dallas, Texas or Two Egg, Florida, and there is one, or any number of places, okay? Our physical destiny is of where we will be is not as important as who we will be with. Okay? Now, He has chosen Jerusalem. He has chosen Israel, and that's where He's going to be, so that's where we desire to be. But what I'm trying to say is, it goes back to a song that was so beautiful. We sang many years ago. I want to be where you are. You know, it really doesn't matter where we are physically, as long as we are with Him, does it? When we understand that. When we understand, excuse me, sorry about that today, something's got my sinuses in this office. I ought to change over to Kathy's office, right there, right? So if they were wise, they would figure it out and understand their destiny. After all, how can one chase 1,000 and two put 10,000 to rout or to flight unless their rock sells them over to their enemies, unless Yudhe-Vavhe hands him over? For our enemies have no rock like our rock. Even they can see that. You know, the enemy, our enemy, Satan himself, those that are doing the wickedness, the evildoers upon this earth, they know, down deep inside, they know who's in control. Probably better than we do. I have a funny feeling that many of these people are in power today, lay in their bed awake at night, trembling in fear, knowing that one day they will have to answer for what they have done. At least I pray that's the case. Down in verse 30, okay, I just went into those. Okay, I just looked down at my notes here. Go to 43. Sing out, you nations, about His people. For He will avenge the blood of His servants. He will render vengeance to His adversaries and make atonement for the people, for the land of His people. Redemption is coming. Don't ever, no matter what happens around us, no matter what happens in the earth, do not ever allow these words to depart from you. We are the redeemed. In the end, we are redeemed from the corruption that is around us. I mean, talk about, you know, if we could just figure that out. If we could just figure it out. Oh yeah, the cliche, well, I've read the back of the book and it says we win. Well, how are you doing at winning today? Okay? If you read the back of the book, you know that in the end we have victory. Well, if we have victory in the end, then we have victory now. We need to learn to walk in it, okay? And in verse 47, Moses starts to wind this thing down, and he says, I'm going to go back to 45. When he had finished speaking all these words to Israel, he said to them, take to heart all the words of the testimony against you today so that you can use them in charging your children to be careful to obey all the words of this Torah. For this is not a trivial matter for you. On the contrary, it is your life. Obeying, taking to heart, walking in obedience, the words of this book, it does not bring you to life. It is life. It is life when we allow these words to transcend every part of our life. That which we look at, that which we allow to enter into us spiritually, emotionally, physically, that which we take part in, that which we set our hands to do, everything must be filtered through the words of this book. And with that, Moses says in verse 48, I'm just going to read these words. The same day Adonai said to Moses, go up into the Avarim range to Mount Nebo in the land of Moab across from Jericho. Look out over the land of Canaan, which I'm giving the people of Israel as a possession. On the mountain you are ascending, you will die and be gathered to your people, just as Aaron your brother died on Mount Hor, was gathered to his people. The reason for this is that both of you broke faith with me there among the people of Israel at the Mervat Kadesh spring in the Zin desert. You failed to demonstrate my holiness there among the people of Israel. I've been up to this area. I know what it looks like. I've stood here in the area where Moses was taken to. Beautiful view. Looking out over the Jordan. It said that, and I wasn't there on a very clear day, but it said that on a clear day you can see all the way to the Mediterranean. Tradition holds that on that day that Moses went up, he saw all the way to the Mediterranean. He could see everything laid out in front of him. You know, I wonder about his walk up there. I was thinking about that this morning as I was reading. He's 120 years old. I wonder just how fast he walked. Did he use his age as an excuse? Did he use his age as a reason to walk a little slower? Or, I kind of have a feeling it's something different. He did not use that age as an excuse for anything. Instead, he walked with the same fervor that he had walked for the last 40 years specifically. He walked with that same fervor to his destination. Because he knew that yes, he was going to be buried. Yes, he was going to die. And yes, he was going to be buried on Mount Nebo. But he knew what his destiny was. See, he had taken to heart the verses. If they were wise, they would figure it out and understand their destiny. He knew his destiny. And he knew that even though he had failed, he had a destiny on Mount Nebo, which would bring him one step closer to his true destiny in the presence of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh in Jerusalem, in Israel. Of course, he got a little taste of that about 2,000 years ago on the Mount of Transfiguration. He had a little taste of the being in Israel. He's going to have much more in the end. But he made that long walk. And these words, the reason that you and Aaron have died or are going to be dying soon is because you failed to demonstrate my holiness among the people of Israel. Does that not go back to some of the first words that we read? That our job is to proclaim his greatness? And how do we do that? We do it by living. Demonstrating his holiness. You know, we're coming up on the time of Sukkot. The time of Yom Kippur. How will, I want to just ask you, and you know, we're going to be with a very small group. I've been in, you know, for Sukkot, I've been in groups of 800 or 900. I've been in groups of 200 or 300. I've been in groups of just a few. And this year it's going to be just a very few. I walk into the time of Sukkot, having read these words every year, and consider, what am I going to do when I get there to demonstrate His holiness in front of the people? What will my attitude be like during Sukkot? What will my life be like during Sukkot? What will I live out? You know, we're going to be with each other for 8 days, many of us. It's easy at Passover, you know. I mean, you're together for just a couple days there. At Shavuot, you're only together for a day. But in 8 days, you know, it's kind of funny. You see people the first couple of days at Sukkot, and, you know, the makeup and the hair is just perfect and everything. About 5 or 6 days into it, you see more hats being worn. You know, I didn't feel like getting up and doing all this stuff. Just throw a hat on, you know. And so we see that after a little while, our true self starts to come out just a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit. By the time that we're at the eighth day, you know, it's like, okay, time to go home now. I've had about enough of these people. This is about all I can stand. I need to go back home. And of course, we want to come back the next year. But, you know, it goes back to these verses. I mean, He knows us. He knows there's a defect. You know, if you're walking into Sukkot this year and you're expecting to be there with perfect people, no, they're going to be defective. Just like you are. Just like I am. You know, we all walk in with a defect. The key is to not get there to point out other people's defect. What we should be doing is going there so that our defects can be dealt with. And this brings us to Yom Kippur. Sunday night through Sunday at sundown to Monday at sundown, we will be observing Yom Kippur. It's a day that the scripture says to deny yourself. Basically, to afflict your soul. Many people will go that day without food. Some will go without food and water. You go and, you know, you ask and you find out what you're supposed to be doing. It's a day that, you know, in our house, you turn the television off. You know, I may check the computer once in a while during the day just to see the news, because it is a very prophetic day. If you've got kids and they've got video games, unplug it if you have to. Well, they just can't get by. They got by for, you know, like 5,980 years without video games. Children were raised for that many years without this stuff. Okay? No child has ever died for lack of video game. In fact, may be good for the whole family. No person has ever died because of lack of television. At least I have not been able to find one. Okay? It's a day to take serious. It's a day, Yom Kippur is a day that it's more than just fasting. Yom Kippur is a day to really consider our lives. It should be a very sober day, a very somber day. It's a day to mend relationships, if possible. Okay, I talked to our group. We met the other night for Yom Teruah. And I said, you know, it's a day that we should go and we should try to mend relationships as best we can. But understand, in every relationship, you and I only have the... you and I only have the choice over one person. I can't choose for you. You can't choose for me. I can reach out to you, and it's all I can do. You know, I can pick up the phone or I can email. I hate it. I don't do things like that by email. I can pick up the phone And I can lay it out to you. It's your responsibility. You know, it's like this. The ball's in your court. You ever watch a tennis match? You hit the ball into the other person's court. If they don't hit the ball back to you, you don't go jump over the net, go over and get the ball, bring it back to your side of the court, and hit it to them again. No. What has to happen is that they must get the ball and send it back over. All right. Now, in modern day Christianity, we have what Dietrich Bonhoeffer, awesome books of old. Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote a book on cheap grace versus costly grace. And how it was his premise that modern day Christianity, and this was not modern, this was, you know, 1940s and 50s, I guess it was. I believe Bonhoeffer was in the time of Nazi Germany in that area. And he was even calling it then cheap grace versus costly grace. Today we have this believism. Oh, all you have to do is confess with your mouth and believe in your heart and confess with your mouth and you shall be saved. Somebody says they're a Christian. You know, everybody from Obama to whoever. Oh, and they say they're a Christian. So they must be. But there's no fruit. Okay? There's no lifestyle. And you know what I'm talking about. Okay, I'm talking to people this week. You understand this. You've been there. All right. You know that redemption is more than just saying a few words. That redemption has to have fruit. Faith without works is what? Dead, as Yaakov said. And so we see it today. This is part of this movement that you and I are a part of, is that if you confess it, but there's no works, then there's nothing there. And where are those works? If you love me, keep my commandments. What are those commandments? It's the Torah. All right? We all understand that. But then there is another area of this that is all about Yom Kippur, and that is forgiveness. Not just forgiveness between us and Him, but forgiveness between each other. And this is the message of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, the day of getting things right, the day of laying it out. All right? You and I understand, at least we should, because we go back to the book of Leviticus, that there was no forgiveness without a sacrifice. They had to bring a sacrifice with a pure, true heart of forgiveness. They couldn't just say, hey, you know, I did something wrong, and hey, how about, you know, slaying this animal for me, and it'll take care of everything. No. Leviticus is very clear about this. That in order for there to be forgiveness, that sacrifice meant nothing unless it came from your heart. This is what Hebrews is saying. The blood of bulls and goats could not take away sin. It had to be that the blood of bulls and goats was offered because it was an attitude of the heart looking forward. Of course, we understand this day, looking forward to the Messiah. Today there's a cheap grace, there's a cheap believism, and there's cheap forgiveness. You know, when in Torah, forgiveness costs something. Go to the book of John. When the Pharisees came to Yochanan, and they said, hey, we want to be baptized too, you know? All these people are getting involved in all this stuff, and we want to do it too. John just didn't just say, oh, great, hey, this will look good in my records. He didn't just, you know, wow, okay, everybody, make sure you get these guys' names because we want to send it to the denominational headquarters, and wow, this is going to make the front page of the next quarterly and all this stuff. Instead, he looked at them and he said, bring forth fruit worthy of repentance. Somebody calls you on the phone during Yom Kippur and says, oh, please forgive me. Well, our attitude should be, of course, I am willing to forgive you. Forgive you of what? What have you done? See, here's where the rubber kind of meets the road, doesn't it? When we wrong somebody, and I'll put it on, you know, on this side, when we wrong somebody, it's not just that we are supposed to go to them and ask forgiveness, but we should ask forgiveness for what we've done. You know, if I am caught up in gossip regarding your life, it's not for me to just get on the phone and say, oh, please forgive me. No, it should be, you know, the other day some things were happening and I was surrounded with some people and they were gossiping and I got caught up in that and I joined in their gossip and I spoke against you. Please forgive me for that. It's more than just words. Yom Kippur should be more than just some meaningless words of, oh, everybody, please forgive me. Well, that should be our attitude and heart. And of course, when somebody comes to us, we should be willing with open arms to forgive. But remember that true repentance will always have some kind of fruit with it. It's not just going to be words. All right. Well, we've got two more weeks together. We've got, I think, one more Torah portion, number 54, the blessings. And we've got Sukkot in the middle of that. We'll have, next week, we'll actually depart from the Torah readings and go to a message on Sukkot, and then we'll come back and finish up the blessing at the end. Boy, it's hard for me not to get kind of sentimental as I approach that. But, you know, it'll probably happen along the way, I would imagine. But I'm not going to go there this week. There'll be plenty of time for that here in a couple weeks. So with that, again, Chag Sameach. In Israel, it is common to say, and I wrote about this this week, May your fast of Yom Kippur be easy. Well, no, I don't ask that anything's easy in life, but that it is worthwhile in the end. So may your fast, may your time of afflicting your soul on Yom Kippur, however you do that, may it be something that brings forth fruit for His kingdom so that you can proclaim His greatness in the end. Shavuot Tov. Have a wonderful and blessed, prosperous week. And keep excitement there. We are almost at Sukkot. See you next week. Yivarechach Adonai v'yishmarecha Ya'er Adonai panav elecha v'yichunecha Yisa Adonai panav elecha v'yasem lecha Shalom.